League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
All right, we're back. It is time for the third segment of our Rocktastic Super Spectacular Christmas Holiday Extravaganza here on Jay Flemma Sports Report. I am Jay Flemma, and you're listening to the Golf News Net on iHeartRadio. So we're going to bring in our next guest. Please give a warm welcome to one of the PGA head professionals here in our wonderful Treasure Valley area in glorious Idaho. Please welcome Scott Nichols of Ridgecrest Golf Club. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. Thanks for having me on.
So we had a wonderful discussion with Brian Keough of the Irish Sun, talking a lot about not only the end of the season on the PGA Tour and the DP Tour and LIV and such, but also the hopeful reunification of the tours and the scuttlebutt on what things look for next season. I'm just curious, what are you hearing with regards to possible unification, if anything, between the PGA Tour, LIV, and bringing all of golf back together?
Well, Jay, I haven't followed it very closely. I followed it a little bit just being a golf professional, but I believe that, I mean, it needs to be unified and it's going to be unified. I think both sides have seen the division that it's created within our game. And I don't know what it's going to look like, but I do think eventually they will get together and come together in some sort of a tour.
I had a great laugh at a course that I used to play back east where they had a brew pub. They would brew their own beer at the clubhouse. They had four big tanks. They named them Arnie, Jack, Tiger, and Phil. And when Phil went over to LIV, they took red tape and put it all over Phil's name. Okay. It's a sign. I'm curious, you know, what do you hear from the rank and file customer, the rank and file public golfer who, you know, changes their shoes in the parking lot and pays their money and watches all of this? Are you hearing anything from the fans with regard to, are they happy what they're seeing with these tours? Do they like LIV? You know, are they really yearning for unification? What's the scuttlebutt from America's golfers?
Well, I think the majority of golfers here, especially at our golf course, is pro PGA Tour. And just for the fact that the extraordinary amount of money that some of these guys have gotten signing with LIV. So it just kind of puts them off right away. It does look like a big money grab. And, you know, if you put the shoe on the other foot, it might change things. But most people are pro PGA Tour because that's what they've known. And the new startup, the new kid in town, LIV, throwing a lot of money at a lot of players, doesn't set well for most people from what I'm hearing.
It's the style of golf also doesn't seem to be worth the money. You know, they're playing for these huge purses, yet it's very loosey-goosey. You know, they're playing with a shotgun start. That alone right there smacks of, you know, rubber chicken scramble. You know, they're letting them wear shorts on the golf course. They're clowning around, pouring beer off of the balcony into the fans' mouths, you know. Do the fans like what they're seeing from LIV?
Well, I think there is an aspect or a, I shouldn't say aspect, but I think that there is a bit of a population that does enjoy that type of thing. It brings the tour players back to a weekend golfer, one of them type mentality, basically. And just makes it just an ordinary game rather than a game of, oh, I don't want to say not a game of honor, but it certainly is that as well. But you know what I'm saying? It takes that PGA Tour aspect where we're wearing pants, we're tee times, we're
Brings it
kind
to the
of
common
joking
man, sort
around.
of.
Yeah, a little bit. So I think there's a little bit of some fans out there that appreciate what LIV has done to kind of make these LIV players, these tour players, more on the same level. However, obviously they're not on the same level financially. Yeah, you could ask five people and you'd probably get, five different answers of what they feel about the format. It is definitely different than what we know and what we have known. So,
Now, you brought up a good word there, format. Well, that's one of the things that's being bandied about as a resolution to bringing the tours together is playing different type of golf instead of just your typical 72-hole stroke play. Some of them are talking about having it more like soccer, where the tours will be integrated, but several people will be relegated to mini tours down below, and that you'd have to, earn your way up to the top or possibly percolate back down, just, a more soccer-ish style than what we have in America. Is there any thought from the fans on what they'd like to see with regards to a different format, whether it be individual tournaments like, say, stroke play versus match play versus Stableford, or whether it be in terms of the global overall, instead of points race, having it be, like a tournament?
I mean, as far as fan goes, as far as the fans go, I don't think that the model that the PGA Tour had is broken by any means. I think the fans are used to, turning on the TV on the weekend or even, Thursday or Friday and watching tournament golf and knowing what they're going to get. So I don't think from fan standpoint that they're ready for any kind of change in format. Just because it's been so long since there has been. Now, when you throw in a match play or two golf tournament, I do think the fans like that. I think they like a little bit of variety in the formats of PGA Tour, but for the most part, that stroke play is predominantly what they want.
I have noticed that they've switched the match play over. For example, it used to be a straight 64 team player bracket, and now they have it a bit like a soccer style thing where they'll break it off into groups, and you have to win your group of 16, the 16 groups of four. You have to win your group of four to get into the bracket. An interesting switch, something like that. You're right, though, that there's a bit of a wait and see that is going to have to happen. Are the fans as frustrated as the journalists are with the lack of tra and the players at the lack of transparency in the whole process, and that it seems like nobody finds out anything that's going on until they announce the decision that's been made in stone and go with it, and that's the end of the discussion?
Not that I've heard, Jay. As long as there's golf on the weekends for people to tune into, and there are, some familiar names on there, I think people are, for the most part, are still happy with it. I can't imagine that they don't miss seeing some Brooks Koepkas, some Jon Rahms, those type of names on a PGA Tour leaderboard. But for the most part, I haven't heard any grumblings in that aspect.
Well, that's always good news to hear. So let's switch gears a bit and let's talk about what are your thoughts on, as you sit back and look at the 2024 season as a whole, if you had to pick player of the year in both the DP World Tour and in the PGA Tour, who would you throw the bone to?
Oh, the DP World Tour. There's just so many guys out there. On both tours, there's so many guys out there that could win. The
Start with
DP World
Rory.
Tour. Pardon me, Jay.
Start with Rory.
Yeah, I was gonna say you'd have to be a little bit crazy to not think that Rory could do it on both tours, really. But boy, you just can't bet against Scottie Scheffler right now. That guy is just on an absolute phenomenal tear. wonderful human being, and obviously just a top-notch golfer. He is the best of the best right now.
And he gave us the best Halloween costume of the year, orange prison garb emblazoned with Louisville County golf team, Louisville prison golf team.
Yes, he did.
And definitely what has to be the zaniest thing to happen on the PGA Tour since 2009, that's for sure. I remember I was in Idaho on one of my trips getting ready to move out here, and I woke up very, very early, and I had written a piece, and I called my editor in chief. And I said, "Hey, did you get the piece?" He goes, "Aren't you in front of your television?" I'm like, "Well, I just woke up. I'm, 2 hours behind you right now." And he said, "You better put the television on right now. Scottie Scheffler is in jail." I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" So that definitely gets the award for the craziest thing to happen all year. I'm thinking about giving my vote to Xander Schauffele, though, on the back of winning both of those majors. Okay, he edged out Scheffler and a lot of others first at that dreadful golf course in Kentucky, Valhalla. Talk about it's Voldemort, they ought to rename it. But then at Royal Troon, when he had that marvelous final round, zooming past everybody, including Rory, to take home the claret jug. So yes, Scheffler had a phenomenal year too. He had 9 wins, which is a spectacular record. A close call either way. So, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with one more segment. We've got Scott Nichols of Ridgecrest Golf Course in Nampa, Idaho, outside of beautiful Boise in the Treasure Valley. So, Scott, we'll be right back after this. All right, good. So we'll get into golf course architecture and design for the next segment.
Okay.
Perfect. Okay, so
Sounds great.
7, 6, 5, 4. All right, welcome back, everybody. Jay Flemma here from the Golf News Net and iHeartRadio, and you are listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report. It's our Christmas show, holiday show, festive show, whatever you celebrate. It's that beautiful time of year where we're getting together with all of our friends that came and participated on the show during the year, and some new friends as well. And we've been talking a lot about the year in review, but also talking a lot about travel. And that's what we're going to do right now. So we've got Scott Nichols, the PGA head professional at Ridgecrest Golf Course in Nampa, Idaho. So, do you feel that the Pacific Northwest needs to get more exposure because it doesn't get quite as much tourism as, say, California, Florida, Pinehurst area, New York?
Well, I think the key word there is need. I don't know if it needs to get that as far as golf goes. When you do travel out to the Pacific Northwest, there are so many great golf courses that are just top-notch golf courses, and you'd be hard-pressed to find some better golf courses anywhere in the world. Very affordable, just all-around wonderful experiences. So I don't know if it needs to be have more exposure, but if it did get it, the secret would be out.
There's some phenomenal golden age designs. You've got a fellow named A. Vernon McCann, and you have Chandler Egan that are, two of the big pillars of golf course architecture in the western part of the United States. But then you've also got the new crop of architects that have come along. You've got your Hance, you've got your Doak, you've got your Coren Crenshaw. Bandon Dunes has rapidly risen to the top echelon and belongs in the pantheon of greatest world resorts. And that's only, what is it, about 7 hours away from Boise, Idaho?
Yeah, it's not too far. It's just a day's drive.
And then you've got Robert Trent Jones Jr. designed Chambers Bay. And since then, you've had two more courses sprout up in Washington. You've had Wine Valley and Gamble Sands, which is public, respectively designed by Dan Hixon and David McKay Kidd. And then as you move further west, you get to Boise, which has its own unique ecosystem and its own weather systems. Boise sits 3,400 feet above sea level, sort of in its own valley, the Treasure Valley. So what are the unique terrains that, the golf courses in the southwest part of Idaho have?
Well, you can drive an hour pretty much in any direction and find totally different golf courses. You can drive up an hour north up to the Crouch area and find Terrace Lakes, which is right setting in the mountains. You have very undulated everything basically up there and just a wonderful golf course. You can drive south and hit a links style course. You've got all of the different style golf courses right here within a 60-minute drive.
Now, one of the architects from the modern era actually hailed from the state of Washington. His name was John Harbottle, and he was from a famous golfing family. His mother, Pat Harbottle, was one of the greatest amateur players in history. And John's designed a number of courses in the Pacific Northwest, and in particular, a couple of them in Boise, and in particular, your course, Ridgecrest.
Yeah, John Harbottle, a fabulous designer, great. I mean, just great vision that he has for a golf course, and he can take a piece of land and just put his vision on it, and it's just second to none. Just a wonderful golf course architect and
He had
beautiful golf courses.
a terrific career arc before his untimely death a few years ago of a heart attack. He was just in his late 40s, early 50s. I forget off the top of my head how old he was, Scott. But he was an incendiary talent that was rising up the ranks. He had done Gold Mountain in Washington, and he had also done Banbury Ridge, which is also in Boise. Tell us a little bit about what are the hallmarks of John's strategic designs. What if you're playing a Harbottle course, what is it that makes it a Harbottle design?
John liked to take some features from some Scottish courses and implement them into his designs and work with the land that he had. And if he had to build it up to, he would. He wasn't afraid to mound some dirt and make some rolling hills if he didn't have it. But he would lo love to take different signature holes of some Scottish golf courses and put it in his designs.
Sort of like template holes, various ones that you would find at National Golf Links of America and that were carried through the Golden Age and now have reappeared in the second Golden Age.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and he does a great job. He did a great job at it.
How many cubic yards of earth do you think were moved to build Ridgecrest?
Oh boy, your guess is as good as mine there, Jay. I do not. Well, I don't even have a guess.
The
A
core.
lot.
It feels eminently natural, though. It seems as though there's two different ecosystems, the front playing out on that tableau on the mesa that overlooks the city, and then the second sort of out into the foothills area.
Yeah, for sure. We do have two distinctive nines, more of a links style front nine, some rolling hills, as you mentioned, and then our back nine. Drops off of the ridge, and we have more of a traditional golf course, if you will, with some elevation changes, which would not be traditional. But so yeah, two distinctive different nines, and what John had to work with out here before he started designing the golf course was a cornfield out on the
Really?
our where our front yeah where our front nine was a cornfield, and he had took some dirt and made the mounds that you see out there now. And yeah, so there was a lot of dirt moved on the front side. I am not sure on the back side. I don't know what it looked like beforehand. But he definitely took the terrain and made it what it is now.
Well, tell me if I'm wrong, but cornfields tend to be almost particularly flat. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not wrong at all.
So
Yeah.
that means that he must have done a wonderful job of just subtly scooping out the low areas and building up the higher areas. It's the illusion of not moving Earth, even though you did, because it feels so eminently natural. It flows beautifully. The horizontal movement of the fairways, especially on the front nine, is particularly good. You can see your diagonal angles off the tee.
Yeah, he did a fabulous job there for sure. And yeah, and just like you said, Jay, just moving the dirt to where it makes it almost natural looking. Yeah, just did a fabulous job.
It seems to me that one of his long suits is par fives.
Yeah, he does a good par five in my knowledge from his designs is he likes kind of a risk reward par five, which is in my opinion, is exactly what golf should be. You should have some reward if you can hit the shot, but without risk, it would be a little bit boring, I would think, that you just kind of get out there and smack it rather than having to strategically place your shot.
And then adding an extra level, an extra layer on top of that. Okay, both of the par fives on the front require alternate shot patterns. Fade off the tee, draw into the green on number four, and fade off the tee, draw into the green at number six. I think I have that right. Six is
Number
number seven. Sorry about that. Number seven. And then shifting to the back nine, it seems as though that long, large ridge, that 10 green, and it extends along to where 17 green is. That's one of the major features there. And then the waterway that sort of serpentinely winds its way around, and it causes particular problems at number 14, is the other major feature. And that those are two of the those had to be the genesis of the routing of the back nine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail right on the head, Jay. Absolutely is.
So tell us about some of the strategic ways that you have to attack the back nine.
Well, that's a great word, is attack the back nine. Boy, you get to number 10 and that green will bite you if you're not in the proper position, depending on the hole location. I always like to get through number 10, 11, and 12 at even par. And then it's go time from there. 13 is short par four with a tricky green. You can birdie that hole. And then 14 to par five, which you definitely need to birdie that. 15 is the ultimate risk reward hole on our golf course. It is a short par four, but the carry is over water. You'll see people drive the green, and you'll see people hit a 5 iron wedge into that green. So there's a couple different ways to play that, depending on maybe wind conditions, depending what you want to going to want to do
And
there,
pin placement.
and play and hole location for sure. 16 is a great little par three, carry over water. Boy, that's just a good standard hole right there. There's birdies there, there's pars there, and there's bogeys there. I mean, it's a really good par three that can be stretched out from anywhere from 110 yards to 190 yards with the tee complexes that we have. Then we get to probably the hardest hole in the Treasure Valley, the 17th
Number
hole.
17, the wall hole.
Yeah, this is where John Harbottle's vision was definitely put on display. There is a, boy, I don't know how many feet elevation change. The tee shot is the most
And
important shot there. Yeah, for sure. The
it's a
tee shot.
sharp angle, too, at the end.
It is. And it's a definitely a tricky golf hole. The tee shot is the most important shot, in my opinion. You have to hit it long enough to have a viable second shot into this very, very elevated green. I don't know, 500 feet or so of elevation change there from fairway to the green, which is up on top of this plateau. And then the green itself is sloped front to back, and it is
And left
very,
to right.
Yeah, and left to right. So it's a very tricky putt from wherever you are on the course. But tiptoeing out of there with a par is a big win over the field in a tournament setting. Then lastly, the 18th hole, Jay, is one that people will get the bitter taste of 17 out of their mouth and have a nice sweet taste of. It's a shorter par five. The green is guarded by many, many bunker complexes, but it is definitely a birdie hole. It's one that you can hit your drive down there a good distance and have a shot at the green in two. If you don't make it, it's a pretty straightforward pitch shot into a green that is still receptive and should come out of there with a four more often than you would come out of there with a bogey, say.
There's a great pace to the golf course in that you're constantly being kept off balance. Attack, defend, attack, defend. You can attack at one and two, but you have to play conservatively at three and four, being careful to avoid the water on the par five. You can try to go low the net rest of the way in, although eight is very difficult, especially if you miss the green, the par three with the severely elevated plateau green. So there's a lot to like about Ridgecrest. Now, let's expand our target area. If people are going to come in to Boise for a week of golf, and let's say they're going to play Ridgecrest and Banbury here in town, where else could they spread their wings to play public golf within a couple of hours in any direction?
Oh, well, you have a lot of different options out here in Canyon County on the western side of the valley. You've got some good golf courses. You've got Red Hawk. You've got Timberstone. You've got Centennial Golf Course, which is our sister course right next door. That course was developed by community members, which is it's a good challenging golf course. If you're one to stick in the Boise area, you've got a great golf course in Falcon Crest with 36 holes of golf there. You've got Shadow Valley, which is a great golf course. You've got Warm Springs and Quail Hollow, which are the two Boise City owned golf courses. Yeah, you've got the Lakeview Golf Course, which is now owned and operated by the City of Meridian. So you've got a lot of good venues to play some golf here, and you could spend a good week and play all the golf courses here, and I don't think you'd be disappointed by any of them.
And then, as you expand out a little ways, there's Jug Mountain, and there are the courses up in McCall, Osprey Meadows, and then there's got to be a few more of the resorts in the area as well.
Absolutely. You mentioned Jug Mountain up in McCall, fabulous resort golf course. Highly recommend playing that golf course if you're ever in the McCall area. Yeah, Osprey Meadows is back and open. Great golf course, great design, worth the money. You've got McCall up there with the three nines that they have, which are three distinctive nines. Very fun golf course to play. It's certainly available to get on. Yeah, and as you go up in the mountains, there's lots of things to do, but don't ignore the golf for sure.
We had the good fortune to have Robert Trent Jones Jr. and his second in command, Bruce Charlton, both come on the show a while back and sit for an interview talking about the work that they've done at Osprey Meadows. And Bobby's career arc is fascinating as well, in that he had an epiphany at Chambers Bay. And now he's been building little Chambers Bays all over the world. Gil Hance won the Rio design contest for the 2016 Olympics, but Bobby came in second, and his design was just so out of this world that I told him he ought to try building it right next to in Puerto Rico, next to Dorado Beach East, where his father built that wonderful golf course, put his right next to it, Dorado Beach West, and then you've got the father and the son right next to each other. But if you come out to the Pacific Northwest, and you've got a full week, it's worth getting in your car and doing some traveling as well. And of course, if you can put it in the schedule, you can't miss Chambers Bay. I mean, am I wrong, or is that the number one course in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, of course, it comes down to opinion, but that is one of the top go golf courses in the Pacific Northwest, no doubt about it. Wonderful golf course. I would say a tricky piece of land that was just absolutely done to perfection.
Throw out a couple more names. I know we talked about Gamble Sands and Wine Valley. What intel can you give us on each of those?
I've only been to Wine Valley, and great golf course, lots of fun to play. You'll definitely won't be disappointed when you leave that golf course after a round of golf. But that's about all I can tell you about golf courses up there. Unfortunately, I'm not a big traveler as far as going to travel for golf. Used to do it a little bit when I was younger. Now I'm a little bit more of a homebody, Jay.
Well, one last question before we let you go. On the private side of the ledger, okay, for those golfers that are able to, find their way or trade their way or make friends with folks that have Plum memberships, what are the great clubs of Idaho?
Oh, of Idaho. Well, let me just speak to what I can speak for sure is the Treasure Valley. I think one of my, well, my favorite course here in the Treasure Valley is Crane Creek Country Club. Just a phenomenal golf course, tough as nails, just a great setting. You have Spurwink Country Club, which is a great golf club too, and a really good golf course. And then you have Hillcrest Country Club, where the Albertsons Boise Open is on the Korn Ferry Tour every year. And that's they've hosted this back since the early 90s, I believe, with the Hogan Tour, Nike Tour, Web.com Tours, all of the Nationwide Tour, all of the name changes on that tour. It's been a steady rock in their tour calendar. You have the River Club right down in on State Street, right in the middle of Boise. As far as your private clubs, yeah, Boise has some really nice private clubs for sure. But Crane Creek is my favorite golf course in the valley.
So, last question before we let you go. We had Ryan Keough on talking about where he's going to take me to play in Ireland when I go over to cover the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. You've got a week and you can go anywhere in the world to play golf. Where are you going to go?
Wow, anywhere in the world to play golf.
Anywhere in the world. Morocco, Argentina, Iceland. Okay, your bucket list has come true, Scott. It's a plane ticket to you name it. And it can even be private if you want. So.
Well, I would certainly be remiss if I didn't head over to Scotland and
And.
play all the Scottish courses that I could ever play. And I mean, I would start with St. Andrews for me.
Okay, then pick three more that you would want to hit.
Oh, if I would want to hit Portrush,
Yes.
St. Andrews. Oh man, there's
Two
just so many
more.
that I would hit. I'm drawing a blank, Jay. You caught me off guard with that one. Now I'm into dreamland.
Well, I'll give you the ones that we've been talking about. Okay, I wanted to put together a Dublin trip because Brian lives in Dublin. It would be wonderful to meet Pat Ruddy, go play the island, play Portmarnock. That'd be trip number one. My dear friend Eric Bergstahl, who opened, built, and designed Bayonne, that wondrous golf course in the shadow of New York City out across the water in Jersey, he wants to take me to Turnberry and Western Gales and and Troon. That's a possible trip. I've always had my eye on the south of England. I'd love to see St. George's and Prince's and Deal. You know, options, options. It's going to happen though next year. It looks like it's going to be either Dublin or Northern Ireland up there finally. But I want to throw out a recommendation to you and to all my listeners out there. Don't forget about Casa de Campo. Okay, that is the destination of a lifetime. We don't have Pete Dye anymore, but that there was his magnum opus of all magnum opuses. You've got Teeth of the Dog, which he built in the early 70s. Had it carved and chiseled out of the rock by hand by all of the folks that lived on down there. 8 holes along the edge of the ocean. You hit the ball in the water, it's going to Venezuela. But then the bookend, okay, Die 4, where that is his tribute to National Golf Links of America. You've got bunkers that 100 yards long in the shape of trapezoids or in the shape of other geometric figures, rectangles. And then those 3 cliffside holes where they filmed Apocalypse Now. That is the trip of a lifetime. There's also the private club La Romana, which is gorgeous. You can count out your angles, Scott, standing on each tee box, just like you can count out your angles on those wonderful holes, especially on the front nine at Ridgecrest. All right, everybody, we're going to take a short break. Scott, thanks for coming on the show. We're going to have you back on in the spring.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jay. It's been enjoyable, and wish everybody a Merry Christmas this holiday season.
Yes, that's a great one. Everybody, we're going to be back shortly. Catch you all next time.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Get ready. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is almost here. It's Black Friday in July, and it's coming your way. For 5 days only, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and free shipping on everything. Yes, everything right to your door. So mark your calendars. Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale starts July 24th. Shop everything home at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.